everybody, welcome to another episode of Magic the Amateuring. I'm one of your hosts, Maria.
I'm another one of your hosts, Megan.
And we,
by the end of this,
are so hot.
We might have heat stroke.
I swear to God, I'm gonna have heat stroke
by the end of this episode.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll just see who hits it first. It's like a race.
I mean, I cannot literally remember the last time I've been this hot.
Oh, I definitely can.
When was it?
Like a couple, like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Like the last time I biked home from work.
I am sweating from places that there are no sweat glands on a human.
What? Where do we not have, inside? Are you sweating inside?
I'm sweating internally right now.
I bet you that's a thing.
My hair is sweating.
What?
My teeth are sweating, Megan.
Aren't your teeth always sweating? And that's saliva?
Gross.
I definitely know doctors.
Everybody go to patreon.com/mtacast and donate for the fund to buy Maria air conditioning. Oh my God.
Just think of it. It can't be this hot for that long.
Really?
Really.
Can it?
Nope.
I hope so. It's the humidity, as they say, as well.
It really is, as they say.
Yeah, it's not the heat. It's the humidity.
Oh, that's BS.
You think that's not true?
No, because if you've ever been in, like, dry heat, it gets, like, degrees-wise hotter, and then you feel like you're in an oven, and that's not any better.
So would you rather be in a steamy sauna or an oven is really the question we're asking
neither.
Here. Yeah, it's a tough choice. Tough choice.
Those both sound like I'm gonna die.
No, you're not. They're gonna take you out. You're gonna be nice and crisp. You're gonna be really tan and ready to cut into at Thanksgiving. Megan, you're my turkey.
That's disturbing.
I'm sorry.
That's disturbing.
We have a very special show for you today, because not only are we dying in our own heat sweat up here in the podcast room, we have Judge Rob on the show with us today to tell us all about the great stuff you're going to see in Eldritch, aka Spooky Moon, new mechanics, new cards, what you're going to need to know for your pre-release, what you're going to need to know just, you know, in general after the pre-release.
What you're going to need to know for your SAT prep, what you're going to know for the GRE, what you're going to need to know for the LSAT, the board exam.
The bar.
And the bar exam.
Yeah, we've got questions that were tweeted into us at MTACast that we're going to have Judge Rob answer, which is a super valuable tool. So I'm glad he's with us to help us out, because there's some tricky stuff going on in this set.
Yes, there sure is.
We've got some returning mechanics, but three new ones, and some cards that do some pretty strange and cool things. So we're going to talk all about that on this show to get you ready for the pre-release. Next week, of course, we'll be live from the pre-release, and we'll talk about our experience playing the set for the first time.
It'll be a real party if we live to see it.
Yeah, it's right now it's up in the air. I don't know.
We might pass out.
Yep.
We might pass out from dehydration before
it happens.
What's
the first sign of dehydration?
Being hot.
Okay, well, we're definitely there.
Yep, the second one is seeing cactuses.
Ooh.
Do you see any cacti?
Megan, you're looking kind of spiny.
Watch out, buddy.
Uh-oh.
You might be suffering from dehydration.
Oh, no! Maybe I should... Maybe this glass of clear liquid should be water and not alcohol. screw it. Everybody, Judge Rob is here to give us the what's what, the how to, the hoedown, and the slow and low on the new cards from Spooky Moon. Welcome,
that's
Judge Rob.
Right.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And Judge Rob, you are like the most official judge of our region, the North.
Yes, I am the regional coordinator of the USA North region. I'm responsible for North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, and Wisconsin judges.
And also from preventing the White Walkers from breaching the wall.
Well, that's mostly true. Some of them email me and they're like, hey, can I come down and test a judge?
And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they have to be, the White Walkers need judges, too.
They want to play Magic, too. And they want to play Magic at official times.
Magic is a game for everyone.
It really
even
is.
Even if you're a weird zombie, snow zombie.
Yep.
That's what they are, right?
Basically.
I haven't watched all of Game of Thrones. I'm up to a certain point.
I don't know that you ever get more correct about them, but I don't think you get less correct about them.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So, Rob, overall impressions, Eldritch Moon, how are you feeling? Is this going to be a difficult set in which to live and work as a judge?
I think that this set is mostly very straightforward from a judge perspective. I think it's very exciting from a flavor perspective, just like every previous Innistrad set has been. They decided to just go all in on horror tropes again. They're like, oh, we forgot some, so we're gonna come back and do them again. And everything is executed fairly straightforwardly. The cards, except in a couple cases, do pretty much what they say.
Okay, so just when in doubt, read the card.
Yeah. I mean, that's the general rule anyways. If the card is older than 10 years, then probably look it up on Gatherer. But for the most part, the cards do what they say.
All right, so let's start with some of the new mechanics. Which one do you want to do first, Rob? Lady's choice.
So the single most complicated mechanic is Meld.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it's not close, and it's also their new big splashy headlining mechanic, right? Mm-hmm. They try to do this every once in a while where they do something just crazy insane. And the last time they did something really, really outside the box was it was Innistrad Original.
What was that?
Double face cards.
Oh, that's right.
They were like, stop us if you heard this one, but this card doesn't have a card back. And everybody's like, we actually haven't heard that one. And somebody from this corner said, didn't you do that already with Duel Masters? And they said, good eye. Also, it's still weird. And everybody said, yes, it is.
What was Duel Masters?
Duel Masters, now known as Kaijudo and then Dead again, is a game that Wizards of the Coast produces that is a separate CCG that does really, really well in Japan. They started it a little less than a decade ago, had about 2 years in the US, died here, did really, really well in Japan, kept going. Then they reintroduced it as Kaijudo in the US, and then it lasted about 2 years and died in the US again.
Kaijudo sounds familiar to me.
Yeah, Kaijudo's pretty recent, and it's a very straightforward, very fun game, and they just decided that they're going to go over the top on everything. So if you look at the set names for Duel Masters, they're incredible. They're like Thunder Charge of Ultra Destruction.
Not pulling any punches.
No. They go look it up on Wikipedia and you'll laugh at the set names. Okay. They're just
so
incredible.
Like instead of Innistrad, we'd have Zombie Land of Destruction and Mayhem.
Yeah, that might be restrained for a Duel Masters name.
Oh my god. Wow.
Yeah. And so what Wizards of the Coast tends to do is they do the thing where good artists create, great artists steal, right?
Yes.
They let other games experiment a little bit more. They tend to be very, very conservative with Magic now. And so they tried this out in Duel Masters, the double-faced cards, and they thought it was amazing and awesome, and then they brought it to Magic, and they were like, there are some real tournament concerns, and they just kind of hand-waved them away, and they've been fine. And well, no, at the recent Star City Open Invitational that I did, we gave out a humongous amount of deckless problems for people that had sleeves that weren't totally opaque.
Oh yes, Megan saw that happen firsthand.
Yep.
And that's a real genuine tournament concern.
Yeah.
And they just said, this is acceptable collateral damage, and
yeah.
Went on to print awesome, ridiculous cards. There are cards that double-facedness makes possible that other things couldn't
Yeah, sometimes
do.
You just have to take a risk and say, well, we're going to have some problems, but this is going to be mm-hmm. overall really awesome, so let's do it.
Yep.
And the interesting thing with Meld, too, is that it's only on, quote-unquote, three cards.
Yeah, six cards, three cards. You can count it either way.
In the set, so they're kind of putting their foot in the water very tentatively with it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's talk about what the heck it does.
Yeah, so Meld as a big high-level concept is you have two cards that meld together, you do something, and then you pick them both up, turn them over, stick them together, and you get a double-sized card on the table.
It's like huge. It's a huge card.
Yeah, it's just straight up.
I love it.
If you've ever seen the oversized commander cards or like the planes from Plane Chase, it's about the same size.
Yeah.
That's about twice the size of a card. So if you've seen oversized commander, that's about the size that Brazella is going to be on the table, just killing you in about two turns.
Yep.
And so, as mentioned, there are three pairs of meld cards, mm-hmm. And they are two different things that meld into legendary Eldrazi. Aside, these are the only legendary Eldrazi outside of the Eldrazi Titans.
Oh, really?
Oh.
It's really weird. They just decided that they wanted new legendary Eldrazi because they killed two out of three, and so now they introduced two more.
Well,
interesting.
All right.
Well, although I do feel like the Brazella.
Yeah, Brazella.
Brazella.
Thank you, by the way, to the fan who made us that cover art of like a People magazine with Brazella on the cover.
As the hot new couple.
Oh, so good. So
she's
good.
The talk of it. They're the talk of Innistrad.
It's the talk of Innistrad. Unknown.
I feel like that's merited. Like, you can't have two legendary angels become like a meh Eldrazi.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So it's sensible that they turn it into something legendary, but I'm actually going to touch on the only optional one. So if you look at If you look at the pairs, there is Bruna and Gisella, right?
Mm-hmm.
That merged together into Brisella, Voice of Nightmares. And when you look at the meld text, it's on Gisella the Broken Blade. That trigger is at the beginning of your end step. If you both own and control Gisella the Broken Blade and a creature named Bruna the Fading Light, exile them, then meld them into Brisella, Voice of Nightmares.
Okay.
And so that's not optional. If you have them both...
It just happens.
It just happens. And it's the same way with the common black pair that melds. Chittering Host and Graph Rats.
Chittering Rats, Graph Host.
Graph Host. What? Yes.
Are you sure?
No,
no, Midnight Scavengers. Midnight Scavengers and Graph Rats merge into Chittering Host.
There we go.
Okay.
Graph Rat says, at the beginning of combat on your turn, if you both own and control Graph Rats and a creature named Midnight Scavengers, exile them, then meld them into Chittering Host.
Yeah.
So those aren't optional. You pick them up and you meld them when that condition happens.
Yes.
And note the very, very specific way that condition is phrased. You have to both own and control.
Yes.
So you can't have somebody else's copy.
Right. Own in Magic means it started in your deck or you brought it in from outside the game via a card that you cast.
So you can't control Magic this and be like, ha ha.
Yeah, exactly. If you steal your opponent's Midnight Scavengers with a control magic, Graph Rats will be like, no, you don't both own and control. Graph Rats and
Midnight Scavengers. You don't both own and control me.
You don't control me. You control me. You don't own me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so they'll only meld if you both own and control things that are named that. But the other one, Hanweir Battlements and whatever the red creature is, Hanweir
Garrison.
Militia?
Hanweir Militia.
Militia?
Hanweir Battlements is the land, and the creature is...
Let's find it.
I'm scrolling up to it. Just a second.
Hanweir Garrison. Yep. Nailed it.
So, they are the only one that you can choose when you're going to be melding them.
Yes.
Hanweir... That's an interesting way to divvy up these cards. So, Hanweir Battlement says, it's a land. Tap to add a colorless mana to your mana pool. So you can use it to cast all those sweet colorless mana spells. Red and tap, target creature gains haste until end of turn. Red, 3 and tap. If you both own and control Hanweir Battlements and a creature named Hanweir Garrison, exile them, then meld them into Hanweir the Writhing Township.
Yeah, and that's a pretty sweet, sweet card. I almost said sweet awesome. Well, it is. 7/4 trample haste.
Yep, and no then when deal. It attacks, put 2/3/2 colorless Eldrazi Horde creature tokens on the battlefield tapped and attacking. It's a legendary creature, Eldrazi Ooze, and it probably just kills them outright for existing. It's just like, attack you for 13.
Were you trying to win this game? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's adorable.
Not anymore, you're not.
Yeah.
And the Hanweir Garrison itself is just a very good card. 2 and a red for a 2/3. Whenever it attacks, put 2/1/1 red human creature tokens onto the battlefield tapped and attacking. So both sides of this are pretty sweet. I'm interested to see if this happens in standard or something.
This is the one that is going to be constructed.
Yeah.
Playable. Hanweir Garrison is just a quite fine 3-cost red creature. As you said, it's just 4 power attacking all the time. And so people will play 4 of it and they'll be like, why not? I'll play 4 garrisons and I'll play 2 battlements and I'll get there sometimes and then my opponent will die and it'll be great.
It'll be kind of fun to see the giant Hanweir, the Writhing Township swinging in because you've got to really do some finger choreography to get that to, swing at the same time.
So my guess is actually on coverage that they'll just, that they'll cut a page out of a binder or something and have the double-faced sides together already. So that there's no choreography, you just put it.
Oh yeah, that would be nice. Because
they'll just cut 2 slots out of a binder that are next to each other. Yeah. That's what I would do.
Yeah, it would look better.
Yeah.
But it's kind of neat that they're both printed on the back and then you just turn them over and shrink.
Yep. And it's pretty cool.
So a lot of questions arise from meld.
Yeah. So the other thing to mention about meld is that meld behaves not quite in the way that you want it to with tokens.
Okay.
Because oftentimes you'll both own and control tokens.
Yes.
And great. And it'll try to do its thing. And it doesn't do what you want it to. Let me pull up the exact rules on it so that I can quote them out. Because
it's a little complicated. for such a splashy mechanic, I suppose that it should be, right? It can't be easy.
Only two cards belong to the same meld pair can be melded. Tokens, cards that aren't meld cards, or meld cards that don't form meld pair can't be melded. If an effect instructs a player to meld cards that can't be melded, those cards remain in exile.
Okay.
So what meld actually does is it exiles the cards off the battlefield and then brings them back as a single card. Well, if you control a token copy of one of these creatures, or that's a meld pair, and try to meld it, both cards go to exile, neither card comes back.
Yeah. So does that mean that, and like, since some of them are not optional, it just happens, they both go yep. away. Like, yep. if you had a Bruna, and then somehow you got a token of Gisella,
yep.
they'd be like, goodbye, friend, and then they'd leave and they'd never come back.
Yes.
Just like most of the people that come to my parties.
Megan, I always come back.
It's also the case...
Yeah, you're the only one.
It's also the case with cards that are copies of things.
Okay.
So in this set, there is the Identity Thief.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so if I have a Gisella and an Identity Thief, and I Identity Thief to copy your Bruna.
Yeah.
And I'll have a Bruna and Gisella at the end step. They'll trigger, they'll leave, and then won't come back because
Bye.
Identity Thief isn't a meld card.
Bye, girl.
So.
Rough.
So, yeah. Question. In exile, now I don't know if there's any, I can't remember if there's instant speed process or whatever.
It doesn't matter because the instruction to meld it is in the middle of the resolution. You can't do stuff in the middle of something resolving.
Okay.
So it just does it right during the resolution.
So you cannot process these things once they've gone away.
Yes. Note that they do behave a little bit differently. This is the other thing about exiling them. So if you do something that like exiles them and then brings them back, so there's
Oblivion Ring Style. Yeah. And the +1/+1, bring it back with
+1/+1. The new otherworldly journey. A new otherworldly journey.
Yeah.
It exiles them until end of turn and brings them back with the +1/+1 counter.
Yes.
They come back as their front face.
Okay.
With the +1/+1 counter.
So if you journeyed the Chittering Host.
Yep.
They'd be like, okay, peace out, and then you'd get back a Midnight Scavengers and a Graph Rats.
Yes.
Each
with a counter, which will only last until the beginning of your next combat, because they're not
because
optional.
Because then they'll flip.
Then they'll turn. Yeah. Oh, I see.
And
okay.
Then when that happens, it clears all the counters off because they exile and come back.
But what about Brizella? If you were to counter, blink Brizella, what would happen?
She'd come back as Bruna and Gisella, separate things.
Yep.
And then at the beginning of of the end step.
Then
meld.
That's when
they're
the
also not optional. Yeah, it's based on where their trigger condition is.
Okay.
And so I'm just saying that the Chittering Host will only last, or your two larger things will only last so long.
What about what if, like Maria said, Bruna and Gisella, you journey them somewhere,
yep.
and then they come back, and it's the end step, but they won't transform until the next end
They won't transform
step.
Until the next end step, because
okay.
we've passed the point where the end step
where
has
they
begun.
Would be like, hey.
Yeah, yeah, we've passed the time where it's begun.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to exile right now.
The other interesting thing is if you do something based on converted mana cost of a melded card, it sums the converted mana cost of the front faces.
Yeah, that's so weird.
It's because they changed the rules for double-faced cards and made it based on the front face's converted mana cost.
Gotcha.
And so that meld cards are just sum them up. You get a large number.
So if you wanted to, say, repeal a Brizella,
yes.
you would have to pay...
11.
11, because 7 plus 4?
Yep.
All right.
If you want to repeal Hanweir... Hanweir the Writhing Township, it's still 3.
Oh.
Because it's a land plus a creature, 0 plus
That's
3.
That's perfect.
Great.
Nice.
Turns out that you can still Abrupt Decay that card.
Oh, well, yeah.
Because they made this to make cards like Abrupt Decay slightly worse, and then made a card that it doesn't matter for. Good work.
Meld!
And there's a whole bunch of other stuff buried in the FAQ. They're colorless cards. You can see that on them. You can name them. So if you, for some reason, need to name the back face, like you want a Pithing Needle.
Oh, I see.
Gotcha.
I was like, Earl, I will name it Earl.
No, I mean, you can. But like if you need to Pithing Needle them or name them for something, you can name the back face on
gotcha.
Its own. So none of them have activated abilities.
No.
But there's things that are relevant for naming cards.
Okay.
And so you can name that back face.
Remember
the
to use
a single card.
The full name when you're in a tournament setting.
Well, just identifying it unambiguously is enough. So if you say the meld back that is the legendary angel that, I don't know, she's like a 9/7 or something. Yeah,
that's fine.
Whatever.
Okay.
The meld angel is also just fine.
Yeah.
They're all
like, excuse me, which meld
which
angel?
One, buddy.
I've definitely done that to people in tournaments where they're like, yeah, Kuman something. Like, there's a number of cards with those letters in them in Standard right now, because Kumano had a bunch of cards.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And they were like, I can't remember anything more. I go, can you describe it? No. Okay. Killed you last game.
Can you describe the man who stole your purse? I have a lineup of cards that could have stolen your purse. Will you identify it?
Please point out the card which you think is going to kill you from this lineup of cards.
I feel like that should count. Magic card lineup. So, okay, we've got some questions from listeners, too, about Meld.
Oh, we're
just going to hit Meld questions real quick?
No, I'll we'll come back to them. We'll circle back to them, but just FYI, we'll talk about it a little more.
Yeah. So we're going to hit Emerge real quick. So Emerge is basically the chest purchasers from Alien as a mechanic. They burst out from inside something else.
Yes!
And they're a really slick way to make colorless cards that also have color identity for Commander and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about... who's one of my favorite ones? I really like Elder Deep Friend.
Elder Deep Friend. I'm sure that's what it's called.
It's Elder Deep Fiend.
Oh, that's so cute, though.
It's a creature Eldrazi Octopus. It's a 5/6 for 8 mana.
Just a little Elder Deep Friend.
Yeah. he's my friend. Yeah. He's going to hug a bunch of people.
That's what I called my grandpa, because we used to have some really deep conversations, you know, like we got into some stuff.
He was your Elder Deep Friend.
Yeah. Just kidding, I never knew my grandpa. Single tier. Either one.
Woo, boy.
Yeah. That's why whenever I see somebody wearing suspenders, I get a little teary-eyed.
So.
I really brought it down.
Yeah.
So, Elder Deep Friend. He's a 5/6 Eldrazi Octopus for 8 colorless mana. He has Flash. And he has Emerge of 5 blue-blue.
Mm.
So that changes the way that you cast him. You can choose to cast him either for his 8 colorless mana, or you can cast his firm as Emerge cost, and you can sacrifice a creature as part of emerging him to reduce his cost by that creature's converted mana cost.
Yes.
So if you sacrifice a bear cub, then you will end up with reducing his cost by 2 colorless mana, which means you'll pay blue-blue in 3. He also has, when you cast Elder Deep Friend, tap up to 4 target permanents, because he wants to hug you.
Oh my gosh!
I want to hug you so much! So, just to be very clear, you cannot just cast Emerge without sacrificing something.
You totally can. You can cast the spell by sacrificing a creature and paying the Emerge cost reduced by the creature's converted mana cost.
So, could you just pay the Emerge cost?
You should be able to just Emerge.
5 blue blue?
Let me confirm in the rules.
Alright.
I feel
like
you...
That's why I asked.
Great question, Megan.
Yes.
Is that your phone making noises?
No, it's my tablet.
Oh, it's your tablet. Okay. Yeah.
My apologies.
Here's something I know. I'm not Judge Rob, but this is an Emerge fact that when you sacrifice a creature, you're only reducing the colorless mana cost. You are not reducing the colored mana cost. So no matter what, you're going to have to pay those 2 blue.
Yes, you'll always have to pay at least 2 blue for him.
Elder Deep Friend. Speaking of Alien, great movie. Megan, one or two, what's your preference?
Ooh, I've most recently watched 2, and I just remember, like...
You watched it without me?
No, you were there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you do need to sacrifice a creature to emerge. That's correct. My apologies. I kind of glossed over the reminder text when I was reading it.
Oh, no, that's good.
Yeah, so you do...
So you can never just cast it for emerge.
Yeah, you can't just cast
him
for
emerge. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yep.
Sweet. So, Maria, you remember this, because I think I probably told you during the movie, but, like, Sigourney Weaver's wearing that kick-ass blue jumpsuit.
Yeah, it's great.
Like, I want that jumpsuit.
You would look fantastic in that jumpsuit.
Thank you. Like, so if anybody, if you have a lead on, like, a Sigourney Weaver Aliens 2, or just Aliens.
Aliens.
Yeah, just Aliens.
Jumpsuit. Like... Tweet at us.
It's going to be like $350.
It's going to be so expensive.
Do you know what? I will save for it. I will save.
Everybody, patreon.com/mtacast. Help me buy some AC and help Megan buy a Sigourney Weaver jumpsuit.
No one will ever donate to Patreon again. They're like, what is this even going towards?
I'm serious. We're dying in here.
Oh, we do have these sick new microphones.
Yes, we
do.
Yes, we got...
For those of you who are watching on the video.
We got new mics. We also have a new field recorder with a bunch of inputs. I don't know if you've seen us report live from GPs or anything like that.
Yeah.
But we were pretty hampered in the fact that we only had two inputs on our field recorder. Mm-hmm. So now we have a full six. So we've got some great stuff planned coming up in the future.
Yeah.
Can't quite tell you what it is yet, but it's really exciting. And we are definitely going to be using all of those mic inputs to have a super sweet show on the road.
That is right. Moving back to Emerge.
Moving back to Emerge.
Emerge!
So there's a bunch of Emerge creatures. They're cross colors and rarities, and they all have a when you cast this trigger, just like a lot of Eldrazi do.
Yeah.
And so you'll see them. You'll eat some creatures. They'll burst out of their chest, and they'll like mm-hmm. drain your opponent for three, or Drawnyard Behemoth doesn't quite have a when you cast trigger, but he has a thing that's only effective on the turn that you cast him. They're all just weird.
Draw a card.
Do you know what, Abundant Maw? I'm looking at you.
That's
trying to be the next Siege Rhino up in here. I don't think so, buddy.
That's not an unreasonable card.
No, like, seriously.
I don't think so.
I saw somebody on Twitter asked the question, like, humans obviously is a deck. It's been a deck for a while. It seems even more pushed now.
Yeah.
Is there anything that can be done? And they said, hey, we tried our hardest to make decks that would be able to fight against it. And
all
now
right.
I'm wondering if it's going to be some Emerge happening in Standard.
Very Maybe. Possibly.
Could be cool.
Maybe.
Siege bug.
Siege bug.
Never, buddy.
So the other mechanic that is new is Escalate. And this represents the Gatewatch coming in and wanting to raise the stakes or something. It's a very mechanical mechanic. It's not very thematic. And
the situation in general on Innistrad is escalating.
You know,
it's
I
true.
Never thought about it. Emerge is so flavorful.
It super
yep.
is, as is Meld,
and so
in
is
a
Meld.
Really gross
yeah.
way.
Yeah, Meld is... Meld can be... You could actually kind of just jam Meld into most sets. And
what? You could be like, two things are sticking together now.
Yeah, there's a lot of things where you can put two things together and upgrade them into
like,
something else.
Like Thelma and Louise. They're riding this car into the Grand Canyon, and when they're done, they'll never be separated.
It's like a peanut butter sandwich where you've made it with two different kinds of peanut butter.
That's right. That was much better.
Probably almond butter instead of peanut butter is your other butter. Almond Ooh. Butter is amazing.
I love Ooh. Almond butter. Don't even get me started.
But you guys, isn't almond butter peanut butter sandwich too much? And two, didn't we already say that almonds are BS?
You said that almonds are
we
BS.
We cannot change our almond stance on this show.
I can have whatever stance I want. I'm a guest.
That's true. You're a guest. So I'm telling that Maria can't agree with you. We've made our stance on almonds clear.
Why are we the same person? Almond butter is my new thing. I love it on a Granny Smith apple with some cinnamon on top.
Do you know how bad that is for water?
I mean, it's not like you're losing the water.
What? Almonds are so... almonds use so much water as a crop.
Megan, get off your water stump.
Where does it... Do we jettison
Look,
it into space
after
we're done with the almonds?
I can't stand on a water stump in the first place, okay?
Do we jettison that water into space when we're done using it on almonds?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Oh, okay. Then it's probably really
then
bad.
It's gone.
It's a bad idea all around. So the situation is escalating.
Escalating.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm going to use one of the rares because it's super cool. Collective Brutality, black and one sorcery.
Okay.
Escalate, discard a card.
Ooh.
We're going to talk about what that means in a second. And it has choose one or more. Target opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose an instant or sorcery card from it. That player discards that card. Target creature gets -2/-2 until end of turn. Target opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. So you can choose as many of these as you want. You want all 3? You can choose all 3. You just have to pay the escalate cost for every one of them past the first. It's kind of like Strive was, and it's kind of like Entwine was from Mirrodin. If you took those two mechanics and you just kind of jammed them together, you get
them.
Emerge. Yeah, if you melded them,
kind of like
get Emerge.
Kicker in a strange way, maybe.
Yeah, it's the same thing. You can kick it to get extra modes. The big quote from years ago is that every mechanic is either kicker or split cards. Which isn't quite true, but it's pretty close to true.
Yeah.
Either you pay some extra for some more effect, or you get to choose between two effects. That covers almost everything in Magic.
Okay.
Like,
yeah. So the escalate cost is different across different cards.
Yeah, every escalate cost is different.
Yes.
and you have to pay its base cost, and then in order to get more out of it, you just pay the escalate cost repeatedly.
And you have to pay that right off the top.
Yep.
You when you're casting the spell, you have to announce.
Yep. You announce the spell. You pick all the modes that you're going to do. You pick all the targets for those modes. Then you pay the cost and the escalate cost.
And you have to pay all those costs, and then if it gets countered... Too bad.
You're out of luck. Yep.
Yeah, you can't be like, I will pay for the first one and just kind of look at it. And then I'll pay for another one. Yeah, no.
None of that business.
The other thing to note with collective brutality and why I chose this is because you announce the spell, pay the cost, put it on the stack. If you have some madness cards collective brutality, they'll go on the stack above collective brutality.
Ooh,
because none of their triggers will happen until after you've finished casting Collective Brutality.
Okay.
So they'll resolve first.
Oh.
So you still have to have chosen targets, but you'll get to know whether or not your madness spells resolve before you make them discard their instant or sorcery. And they'll get to use their counter spells on your madness cards that you would be taking away with Collective Brutality.
Oh, bummer.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Yeah.
So be aware. That's the weird thing about Collective Brutality. Otherwise, we have two mechanics that are coming back. Madness, which I just talked about a little bit, and Delirium is also back. And those are exactly the same as they were in Shadows Over Innistrad, if you remember those.
Yep.
And Delirium has, they spread it out a little bit more. It touches some more things, and sometimes it'll make creatures bigger where it didn't before.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, it's check the number of cards in your graveyard, or the number of card types in your graveyard. Do you have a Tarmogoyf? Okay, great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, pretty straightforward.
Yep.
Yes. And we do still have some double face cards.
Yes, double face cards. There's only, all of them turn into Eldrazi monstrosities in the back, except for the legendary werewolf.
Yeah, isn't it funny that the werewolf transform ability, quote unquote, is not going to be a universal this time around? So it's not just going to happen if, you cast no spells on this turn.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is all the werewolves start as werewolves. If you look at the cards, they start on the full moon side. They start transformed.
What?
And then the other side actually has a little Emrakul symbol, a little set symbol.
Things are getting real messy over here.
That makes so much sense. So they're not, we don't even know. Maybe, what if?
They're not even people.
What if their cards from Innistrad were the front, like the before even, the human time?
The humans are gone. There's no human time on Innistrad anymore.
Humans are totally dead. There's a couple of humans.
No, there's humans, but the ones that were werewolves, the ones that were werewolves are just werewolves all the time now.
Yeah.
Are we werewolves or swearwolves?
Loopy monsters.
Yep. And they start...
werewolves, not swearwolves.
Note that all the werewolves in their front face start as werewolf horrors now.
Ooh.
And then they change into Eldrazi werewolf.
Sick.
Interesting.
That's something you don't want coming at you in the middle of the night.
No.
I also want to apologize for my horror of a New Zealand accent.
I thought it was
just a
C minus.
Oh gosh, that's generous.
That's a bit generous.
Very generous. I think it only sounded as though I had a lisp.
I would give it a little
werewolves.
More than that.
That is a weird.
Are we werewolves or swearwolves?
What is? Oh, Eldrazi Reflection.
No,
right?
That is bizarre.
Talking about Aurora of Emrakul.
It is the first card with Reflection printed on its creature type line.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Very cool.
There are two things that make Reflection tokens in Magic's history.
Oh yeah, what are they?
They are Spirit Mirror and they are Soul Reflection.
That makes sense.
They Spirit Mirror just makes a reflection token in return, and then it lets you kill reflections for zero mana because it was making a unique token.
That's why I bring shards of glass in my dice bag.
To make reflection tokens?
Yeah.
Or to use this shard of broken glass to represent it?
Yeah.
This is my shard of broken glass.
Judge Amea uses
it. You know what? I feel like it's also perpetuating false information about how auroras work.
Do you want to explain auroras to everybody?
I don't right now.
Check out Steve and Steve's podcast on auroras.
Yep.
It's pretty good.
That's true.
Pretty good.
So let's hit a couple individual cards here real quick. The big one, of course, to hit is Emrakul, the Promised End.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big daddy herself.
Yes. So Emrakul, yes, her daddy herself. So Emrakul, the Promised End, she is a 13-13 for 13 colorless mana, or for 13 generic mana, a legendary creature Eldrazi. Emrakul, the Promised Inn, costs one colorless less to cast for each card type among cards in your graveyard. Super Delirium.
Yeah, Super Delirium. And I heard it said that what if you have a creature that is an artifact creature? Does that count twice?
Yep, it'll count both, just like it would for Delirium.
Crazy.
It's possible to get Delirium off of as few as two permanents and or two cards in your graveyard.
You know what? Something I honestly don't know if I knew that.
Wait, so we have artifact creature.
Oh, no. You could...
Is there another one that could get you...
Tribal Sorcery.
Oh, Tribal Sorcery. Okay.
Or Tribal Instinct. Or Enchantment Creature from Theros.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You could have an artifact land from Mirrodin. Yeah. And there's lots of two different card types on our card things.
Oh, interesting. Well, the crazier you are, the easier it is to find Emrakul.
Yes, true. And Emrakul the Promised Inn says, when you cast Emrakul, you gain control of target opponent during that player's next turn.
What? Yeah, we talked about this a little bit. Yeah. It's so weird.
I listened to that show when you had a question. And some questions about this.
We made a mistake. Yes. So.
Well, it hadn't been announced yet at the time.
It wasn't a mistake at the time?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yep. Okay.
So the... Emrakul also has Flying Trample and Protection from Instance. Whatever. You can still counter Emrakul. Protection from Instance doesn't apply until she's on the battlefield.
Okay.
Be aware.
Oh, okay.
But very good to know. The controlling a player, there's two things of note. First of all, there's a change. You previously to this set, you could look at a player's sideboard while you were controlling them because they had access to the information, so you should be able to look at it. They decided that they didn't like that in R&D, and so now you may never look at their sideboard. You control
never?
Them.
Never?
Well, they can show it to you if they want, but they
just
aren't
like you can like show your hand at any time.
You want to see my sideboard?
Here you go.
Hey, do you want to see my sideboard?
How tilted would you have to be like, here, just look at all of it. Do you like what you see? Am I pretty now?
If I would have drawn a wish, look at how would I have beaten you.
Yeah.
So you can't look at their sideboard at all, and that means cards that let you retrieve cards from outside the game don't let you do anything with Emrakul the Promised Inn. So there's Coax from the Blind Eternities in the set, mm-hmm. which lets you get an Eldrazi card that you own from outside the game.
Mm-hmm.
If you are controlling somebody and cast Coax from the Blind Eternities, throw it away. Put it in the graveyard. You don't get to fetch anything.
Literally throw it away. Walk to the trash can and put the card in there because that is what it is for.
You don't have to do it yourself. You're controlling them. You can tell them to do it.
Excuse me. Go put your card in the graveyard. In the trash can.
Can we
go
talk about
the trash can?
Coax after Emrakul?
Yes, that's the next thing that I wanted to hit. The other thing that I wanted to hit with controlling another player, if you're playing Twitter Giant at the pre-release and you get hit with Emrakul's control effect, both of the people on your team are controlled.
Oh, wow.
You control a whole team when you control a player in Twitter Giant.
Sweet.
Which is, it basically means Emrakul wins you the game in Twitter Giant.
Yeah, well, basically with game in general. This was a question that was submitted, which I'll say now because I remember it. What is preventing you from conceding when you control the other player?
So conceding is actually something that's outside. Well, the rules for controlling another player say that you can't.
Okay.
And second of all, it's really something that's outside of the context of the game. There's not you can concede at any time, it says, but that's a little bit outside of what happens normally in the game. It's like... Shadowborn Apostle says you can put any number of cards named Shadowborn Apostle in your deck, and that's rules that happen before the game starts.
Sure. Okay.
So there's stuff that's outside of the game, especially in a tournament setting. The clock is outside of the game. You can't force your opponent to just sit. And on Magic Online, you use your time and not their time when you're controlling them.
Oh,
so you can't just pass the turn to them and then have them time out.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
We're going to talk about Coax from the Blind Eternities, though. First wish in a long time. Blue and two, sorcery. You may choose an Eldrazi card you own from outside the game or in exile. Reveal that card and put it into your hand. And first of all, this is the first thing that lets you get both from outside the game and in exile. Ring of Maruf should, but they don't want it to for some reason. It specifically says get a card that has been removed from the game by something. They don't let you do it. But Coax from the Blind Eternities says pick an Eldrazi, put it in your hand. If you're in a tournament setting, this is a card from your sideboard. So if you are in limited in your sealed deck or you're drafted, that's a card that's in your sideboard.
Okay.
From your pool of cards that you didn't build your deck with.
Gotcha.
If you are in a constructed format, that's going to be one of the 15 cards in your sideboard. And this is the kind of card that you look at and you go, when you think of colorless Eldrazi, you think of Emrakul and Ulamog and Kozilek, and actually realistically, there's a lot of fairly cheap colorless Eldrazi because all the Devoid creatures are colorless.
Yep.
What about Commander?
And is an Eldrazi card you own. In Commander? So, different playgroups play it differently. My playgroup just doesn't play with wishes because we don't care. But the in Commander, these are mostly blank, according to how the Commander rules are set up, because there's no sideboards in Commander.
Okay.
Because you play single games.
So and why does it say something? I mean, that just seems so bizarre. Why doesn't it say your sideboard?
Because it's not constructed merely for tournament play. The majority of cards that are purchased actually aren't for tournaments. They're for casual play. So people like just being able to go into their box and grab a card.
Oh, I see.
Right. And so it's structured so that you can just get an Eldrazi card you own. You don't have to worry about having a sideboard in your casual game. Go to your binder. Who cares? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's designed to be more open than just go get a card from your sideboard.
Very cool.
And in general, except in a few cases, cards don't refer to tournament-related stuff. They refer to just specifically the game rule stuff, which is independent of tournaments.
It's just so interesting how quickly Megan and I have become tournament heads instead of amateur kitchen table players.
Well, you don't have a...
Why would you even bother with not have... Why would it even say... Why would it just say in your sideboard?
You know, like, not too long ago, somebody was telling me that a friend of mine was like, I was drafting or whatever, and I'm like, ooh, tell me all about it. And it turned out that they had drafted, not with three packs, but with an entire box.
What?
And I was like, how dare you call that a draft? That's not a draft, that's an abomination. But then I was just like, Maria, get off
Maria,
your high horse.
Calm down.
Yeah. I was like, calm was down. Your deck the sickest deck that's literally ever been made?
How many Wrath effects did you have in your draft a box deck? Yeah. Is the answer less than four? Then it was probably worse than the last one I did.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, well, that's interesting. All right, noted.
Yep. And so, as I mentioned, most of the other cards are fairly straightforward. There was a couple that I wanted to touch
Mirroring
on.
Dragon.
Mirroring Dragon was and Tree of Perdition were the other two that I really wanted to touch
okay.
on.
Okay,
yeah.
So Mirroring Dragon, it's a 4/5 for red 3 creature mm-hmm. dragon flying. When a player casts an instant or sorcery spell that targets only Mirroring Dragon, the player copies that spell for each other creature he or she controls that the spell could target. Each copy targets a different one of those creatures. And you had this as your preview card.
Yes.
It was sweet. And yeah. The big thing to know on Mirrorwind Dragon is it's, well, a couple things to note.
Yeah.
It's not optional, so you can get got, as they say. And so your opponent can giant growth your Mirrorwind Dragon and make their team huge and attack you.
Yep.
They can also Heroes Downfall your dragon and kill other creatures.
Yeah.
So.
It's a two-way street.
Yep, and you can do the same with your Mirrorwind Dragon. It also must target exactly one creature and nothing else. So if the spells with Awaken from Battle for Zendikar, if you awaken a land that's targeting the land,
okay.
So if you're awakening a land and targeting Mirrorwind Dragon, well, it doesn't do much.
Okay.
Congratulations, you can ruin his path, Mirrorwind Dragon, safely.
Yes, that's the other thing, is those cards are safe against Mirrorwind Dragon when you're playing against it.
Interesting.
And so the... Just look at... It has to target exactly one thing, and that thing must be Mirrorwind Dragon.
So if you had an Escalate card,
yep.
for instance, I haven't looked through every single one of them, so I can't think of one off the top of my head.
There's actually the Escalate card we just looked at.
But that targets two different creatures. If you targeted and one of them was Mirrorwing and one of them was something else, it wouldn't happen.
But if you Collective Brutality, target creature gets -2/-2 on end of turn, and Escalate for target opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life, you can Mirrorwing Dragon, you can... Collective Brutality, Mirrorwing Dragon.
Uh-huh.
All of the creatures that you control for some reason because they're all big enough, and then gain a whole pile of life because every copy of Collective Brutality does the whole text.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no. So this is... this is target opponent loses 2 life. But if it was each opponent loses 2 life. If it didn't target the opponent, then you get the effect.
So in Collective Brutality's case, it wouldn't work because it also has another target besides Mirrorwing Dragon.
But if Electrolyze up to 2 targets, creatures divide 2 damage as you choose, and then draw a card. If you target just Mirrorwing Dragon with 2 damage, you get all of your creatures and then draw a card for every one of those.
Every single time.
Sick.
Yes!
And so there's a few cards like that kicking around, and note that it only targets creatures. As mentioned with Awaken, if somehow Mirrorwing Dragon is a land and you awaken it, it'll copy it out into creatures that are lands, because those are legal targets.
Okay.
Well, like, think about your preview card.
Yes.
What was it?
Oh.
Imprisoned
in the Moon.
Yep.
Except that it loses all abilities, so it doesn't have that ability.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
Imprisoned in the Moon's also super cool, which is... We can hit that after Tree of Perdition if you really want to. But
I mean, we can just say that it's sweet and go read the article.
Yeah, sweet. Go read the article. You talk about it really well. So, Tree of Perdition's one of the other oddballs. This is the dark version of Tree of Redemption from the previous Innistrad.
Oh!
You cannot be redeemed.
It's yes. a little callback.
It's exact callback. You exchange the word opponents for yours in this.
Oh, cool.
It's exactly the same card except green instead of black on the other one.
Oh, I
so
love
it's a,
it.
It's a 0/13 for black and 3, creature plant with defender. And it has tap. Exchange target opponent's life total with Tree of Perdition's toughness. The thing to know with exchanges is both things have to be there to exchange them. So if you activate Tree of Perdition and then they kill it in response, nothing gets exchanged.
Okay.
And note that it's exchanging the current toughness and then applying other effects on top of it. So if you put a +1/+1 counter of Tree of Perdition, mm-hmm. it will exchange 14 with their life total. And its toughness, its base toughness becomes 14, and then it applies the +1/+1 counter, so it becomes a 15 toughness creature.
What if, in response, I decide that I don't have a life total? They say, I'm going to tap to exchange Tree of Perdition's toughness with your life total, and I say, I don't have a life total. It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. If something asks for a value that doesn't exist, it gets zero.
Okay,
you're probably dead.
Somebody had a Twitter question about Tree of Perdition.
Probably with Triska Decaphobia.
Starring Tom Hanks. yes, but this was another one which I remember off the top of my head, which was, does this happen? Oh, God. Maybe I
just does this happen.
Just Tree of does Perdition. This happen.
Does this happen? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does. Sometimes you make them 13.
Okay. I was wondering, the new Tree plus Phobia combo... Does it work if your opponent is below 13 life?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The Tree of Perdition would become whatever their life total is. So if their life total is 5, it would become a 0/5.
So, question. If, say, their life total is 20, and the tree's is 13.
Yep.
You tap it and you swap them. The tree's toughness becomes 20, and their life total becomes 13.
Yep.
Can you later swap again because you feel like it?
Yes.
Okay.
Cool.
That's the old Tree of Redemption. Mm-hmm. The way that you did shenanigans with it, and the way that one of my EDH decks does, is it loads a bunch of +1/+1 counters on it, and then trades repeatedly because then I'm gaining life.
Oh, okay.
Man, I want to put a bunch of negative counters on this bad boy.
If you put negative, if you put -X counters, you can deal them damage by tapping Tree of Perdition.
Nice.
Really? Yeah. Because, so, say they're at 20 life, we have a Tree of Perdition that's at 0/13, and I put 3 -1/-1 counters, so it's now 0/10.
Yeah.
I'll exchange 10 for 20, and then that 20 becomes 13. Right? Because it has 3 -1/-1 counters.
Yes.
Or 20 becomes, sorry, 20
Not
becomes
17. 17.
I can't math, apparently. 20 becomes 17, so then you trade them back for the 10, which 10 becomes 7. Then you trade them back again.
Whoa.
Oh, boy.
It's crazy.
The Tree of Algebra is probably what it should be called.
It's a great name.
I mean, for some of us, perdition and algebra are the same thing, so.
Starring Tom Hanks. So.
Oh, and Permeating Mass, I want to talk about, because there's so many cards in this set.
One more question about the tree.
Okay.
When is the last moment that I can use Tree of Perdition to instant win with Triska Decaphobia in play?
So with Triska Decaphobia's trigger on the stack, you can respond to your own Triska Decaphobia trigger to swap their life total with the tree.
Okay.
And if they kill the tree in response, no exchange happens.
Okay.
So, or if they put a +1/+1 counter on the tree, then you can't kill them.
Okay.
Or if they journey the tree.
Yeah.
Get out of here, tree.
Yep. So, Permeating Mass. My friends are trying to figure out whether or not we should call this Derp Touch.
Derp Touch.
So, it's a 1/3 for single green, creature spirit. Whenever Permeating Mass deals combat damage to a creature, that creature becomes a copy of Permeating Mass.
This card is kind of confusing.
It's so cool. So there,
I love it.
So it reads very straightforward. I hit you with the Permeating, or you hit your creature with the Permeating Mass, and now it's a Permeating Mass. But when it hits my creature, is a Permeating Mass.
And that creature's back to normal, question?
No. They stay Permeating Masses forever.
Oh.
There's no duration on this.
So it can turn everything into Permeating Masses, because the first one turns your opponent's creature into a Permeating Mass, and then you have a new creature that's not a Permeating Mass, but their Permeating Mass deals damage to your creature, and now it's
everything's
also
a Permeating Mass.
It's a disease,
including your life total.
You
Excuse
get a mass.
Me, you can't exchange
you
your life total with the Tree of Perdition because my life total is Permeating Mass.
It takes some work to get there. But yeah, permeating mass is straight up a disease. You get the permeating mass disease, and you spread it to other people by touching them.
Oh,
and
it's a rough disease.
Leprosy. It is exactly like leprosy. It turns you into 1/3.
There's an armadillo hidden in the picture of hidden in the art.
Is it on his underwear?
Yep, that's an armadillo. He's okay. Wearing armadillo underwear.
Got it.
Which is a real thing in Texas.
I feel like that's true.
Do you know what? It might be. I was definitely lying, but I'm sure.
But
they
now that I think about it, yeah.
Tweet at MTA Cast.
If you have a picture of armadillo
with
underwear.
With hashtag armadillo underwear.
Please go to patreon.com/MTAcast so we can buy a pair of armadillo underwear and wear it on the show.
What do you guys even do with this Patreon? Anyways,
I also want a 2-second hit on Dark Salvation. Black yeah. XX sorcery. Target player puts X22 black zombie creature tokens onto the battlefield. Then up to one target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn for each zombie that player controls. You target a player, and then you target a creature. If you're on Magic Online, and you're like, I want to kill that creature. Why can't I? It's because you need to target yourself first. If you target your
otherwise,
opponent...
Otherwise, it's going to give that creature a bunch of zombies, and that creature won't know what to do with them.
But if you click on your opponent, be like, no, I want to kill his creature with the zombies. It'll give them a bunch of zombies. And it might kill the creature, but then they have a bunch of zombies.
Yeah.
So, don't do that.
Okay, noted.
Tell them, you get the zombies.
Yes.
I get the zombies. You get the dead times.
Yes, you get the dead times.
But not the zombie dead times, just the creature dead times.
Just the regular old dead times.
Just the regular old dead times.
We did mention this card on the last show, which I want to issue a correction about.
Oh, Providence. That's right. It does count as life gain.
Yes.
Anytime your life total changes, including like if you Tree of Perdition swap, it's gaining or losing life.
That's interesting. I would not have assumed that.
Yep.
No, me neither. I, in fact, incorrectly assumed the opposite.
Yep.
Questions with Judge Rob. So we asked people on Twitter to submit us some questions for Eldritch/Spooky Moon, and we got quite a lot of responses. So we're going to go quickly down this list, and Rob is going to give us the answer. All right, here's a question from John. Is there anything stopping you from casting Emrakul and then... We already did that one, making your opponent concede. Okay.
Yep.
How many spells, this is a silly one, must be on the stack before you can cast Convolute and be able to say this is getting convoluted?
I don't think it's necessarily the number of spells. I think that it is the complexity of the spells that are on the stack.
Oh, very good.
Good answer. It's very conceivable that if all the spells in the stack are just like draw two, discard a card at random.
What if it's like three convolutes? It's like
if there's three convolutes, like that seems good.
It's getting convoluted.
I feel like you can say it even after the first one, but you're gonna get slapped.
Yeah. Mm. But after, like,
two, it's...
If you're putting the third one on the stack.
I think you'll get a eye roll at one for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the best way to use Lunar Force? Do you have to use it on the first instance of the opponent casting any spell? I added that last part because I believe that's what they meant. So Lunar Force, go up a little bit. Is an enchantment.
Oh, yeah.
It's a strange card.
Whenever an opponent casts a spell, sacrifice Lunar Force and counter that spell.
It is not optional. So it's like whatever the next thing they do.
Yes, the next spell that you cast, Lunar Force eats.
That card seems terrible.
It's a somewhat functional reprint of Hesitation, which is whenever a player casts a spell, counter that spell, which countered your own stuff.
Oh.
Lunar Force is actually not terrible. They have to throw a dead spell through it first. They get to choose which spell, but it's just counter the next thing they cast.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem good. It gives too much option to my opponent.
Yeah, it gives them options. It's a card that it's nice to exist, but nobody's going to play it.
All right, we've got a question for Brian. Can I escalate a spell with Goblin Dark Dwellers?
Yep, Goblin Dark Dwellers replaces the mana cost, which is the number up in the upper right-hand corner.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't replace any additional costs.
Okay.
Escalates an additional cost, you can pay the additional costs.
Okay. If I have a Conduit of Ruin, and I try to cast an Endless One with 3 mana, will it come into play with 5 counters? Whoa, these are old cards.
That one was old. Conduit of Ruin is the one that reduces your next creature spell by 2.
I don't understand this question.
It's from the previous
set. So, Endless One is X to cast. So you choose a value for X, and that determines the base cost of the spell. So if you choose, say, a value for 4 for X, that determines the base cost. Then the cost is reduced by 2 for Conduit of Ruin.
Uh-huh.
And so then you will pay 2 mana for four.
Okay.
Or whatever numbers that you want to choose.
So the answer is essentially yes.
Yeah.
This is another older one. Legendary rule. I have the new Olivia on the battlefield, and I cast another Olivia. Can I use the first Olivia's ability on the new one?
The one where you discard a card to give it haste.
Yeah. So that allows you to discard a card as you're casting a vampire spell, correct?
I believe so. I actually never played with Olivia's sad face. It's only made for me. Do you know my name was almost Olivia?
What?
Yeah. Would that be weird for you?
Yes.
You can't imagine me.
I can't imagine being your friend.
Harsh!
So, Olivia mobilized for war. The relevant text is, whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may discard a card. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on that creature, it gains haste until end of turn, and it becomes a vampire in addition to its other types. Yes. You'll have to choose which Olivia before the trigger goes in the, you keep before the trigger goes in the stack, but the trigger will still go on the stack regardless of which Olivia you keep.
Okay.
Okay.
Noted. Another silly question. Why did I think Modern English's Melt With You was Meld With You? Can I still sing it at the pre-release?
You can sing whatever you want at the pre-release.
I'll stop the world and meld with you. Yep, you got it, buddy.
Totally works. Yeah, I think if you meld at the pre-release, like if you're lucky enough to have that in your pool,
you're obligated to sing it.
Ugh. Unsubstantiate doesn't counter the spell, so casting effects still resolve even if the spell returns to the hand.
Correct. And casting effects happened even if you countered the spell note. Countering the spell doesn't... Emrakul's The Promised End's trigger is when you cast Emrakul The Promised End. You can counter her. She'll still control that turn.
Okay.
And Unsubstantiate sends it back so they can take another crack at that. It's not terribly great against Eldrazi's with Oncast triggers.
Yeah.
I think it's in the set specifically because it's bad against them. And so they can print this aggressively costed remand to, and it won't have as much of an impact as it would otherwise.
Yeah. If for some reason we have to flip one of the new meld cards, like Gisela, with no sleeves, do we replace it with a checklist card? Without sleeves, things that flip and a meld into a 2/2 would be confusing with half a creature sitting there.
Wait, what?
So the only time that you're going to meld is if you have two actual cards, right?
Yeah.
And so if I'm getting what this question is asking, is with meld cards, just like with transform cards, the double-faced cards, mm-hmm. you must either play them in totally opaque sleeves or with a checklist card.
Yeah, I think they're wondering about stuff like morph or whatever.
So maybe. Basically what they're, as if you are playing your deck unsleeved, you're going to have a checklist card in there in place of, say, Graphrath's. But as soon as you cast that card, you have a Graphrath's with you because you do need to actually own that checklist card. And so you would then put it on the battlefield instead.
Yeah.
So when you go to meld later on, you're not turning over a checklist card. You're turning over an actual Graphrath's.
Yep.
I think that gets to the heart of whatever that question might have been.
Yeah. And as mentioned, tokens can't meld usefully. They go away and never come back. So
goodbye, buddies.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
So you're forever. Never going to end up in a situation where you're going to only have half of the text of a card.
Okay. Goodbye to you.
Oh, I was wondering where you're going to go. I was thinking it was goodbye, stranger.
No.
Supertramp.
Supertramp.
So here we have a question. I have Brizella enchanted with Flicker Form. I activate Flicker Form's ability. What happens? Here's Flicker Form. I'm going to read it. There might be a sort of a similar effect.
In the set is just Otherworldly.
The Otherworldly Journey, whatever it is. But it essentially enchant the creature, and then you can exile it or whatever. We sort of touched on this before.
What do you mean you can exile it or whatever?
This is what Flicker Form says. One in a white enchantment aura, enchant creature, 2WW:, exile enchanted creature and all auras attached to it. At the beginning of the next end step, return that card to the battlefield under the owner's control. If you do, return the other cards exiled this way to the battlefield under their owner's control, attached to that creature.
But you wouldn't be able to attach the aura to anything, correct? Because it was attached to Brizella?
So it was attached to Brizella. This gives you instruction to attach it to that thing. I'm going to glance at the rules really quick to make sure that I'm...
Ah, man, I don't know.
Because, okay, so you pay the, you attach it to Brizella. What's it called? Flicker Form?
Yeah.
Yep.
You attach Flicker Form to Brizella. You activate it. Brizella goes away.
Yep.
Comes back as Gisela and Bruna. where does the flicker form go?
Man.
What does flicker form say again? Is it just the end bit?
Return the card to the battlefield under its owner's control. If you do, return the other cards exiled this way to the battlefield under their owner's control attached to that creature. My, my, my. It's a tricky little question.
So, the...
This may be the...
It should, you should get to choose which thing it attaches to. It's going to try to attach to both, and only one of them is going to be functional.
Okay.
I'm just making sure that I have rule support for that in the release notes.
Or if you're just kind of like feeling it with your gut, you know.
You know what I feel with my gut?
Hot.
Yes.
Oh, my gut feels so hot right now.
I'll stop the world and melt in this room. I see the temperature and it's getting higher all the time. Yep.
Great song. It really works.
It really does. It's unfortunately applicable to our situation.
If a player exiles a melded permanent, that player determines the relative timestamp order of the two cards at that time, blah, blah, blah. If an effect can find the new object that a melded permanent becomes as it leaves the battlefield, it finds both cards. That effect causes actions to be taken upon those cards. Those actions are taken upon each of those cards. But an aura can only be attached to one permanent at a time. If an aura is... If you try to attach an aura to two different permanents at the same time, you pick which one it's attached to.
Basically. Okay.
Okay. So it would you would be able to pick one of them to attach it to.
Yes.
And but then when they meld it again, it would just fall off?
Yeah.
Okay.
They leave, it dies.
They come back.
Yep.
Word.
It comes back.
Word. So this next question is about unsubstantiate.
Ooh.
Unsubstantiate. So that one reads, one in a blue, instant, return target spell or creature to its owner's hand. The question says, I don't get how this works. Is it a pseudo counterspell because a spell doesn't exist when it resolves?
Yep. The spell just doesn't resolve. This is not actually new territory. Reman did this. Returns it to their hand. It's not in the stack anymore. It's gone.
Yeah. But to answer their question, I think they're asking, like, they thought, like, the spell does go back to their hand.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's, like, not really countered, I mean...
So countering is a word that just means take that card right now and put it in its owner's graveyard. It could just say put target spell in its owner's graveyard. Countering could just say that.
Okay.
And so this is the same thing, it's just returning it to their hand.
Sure.
And it isn't the action of countering it, so things that can't be countered, unsubstantiate will solve.
Okay.
Oh, nice. So you can unsubstantiate an abrupt decay.
Correct.
Very cool.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, so it still goes back to their hand, but nothing resolves. It doesn't resolve.
Yep. If it had a cast trigger, as we mentioned before, it'll still happen.
Yes.
Clarify emerge. Can it be done at instant speed?
It depends on whether the creature can be cast at instant speed. The Elder Deep Friend has Flash. You can emerge with Flash for him, because you say, I'm casting this spell with Flash. I'm going to choose to cast it this other special way. But it doesn't change the speed that you can cast the creature.
Okay. How does Writhing Township being killed affect Delirium? So how many different types is this bad boy in the graveyard?
So when you kill something with Merge, it unmerges and both separate cards are in the graveyard.
Yeah.
So it's a creature and a land, because it's two different cards that are a creature and a land.
With the trigger on the stack, can you sacrifice one half of a meld and still get the melded form?
Nope. Meld triggers have what is called an intervening if clause. Or in the case of, they just say, if you do have this thing that is true, in the case of Handweir the Writhing Township, it checks at the time that the activated ability is resolving, but the other ones have triggers that say, if this thing is true at this time, and it checks both at the time it goes in the stack and at the time it goes to resolve.
Gotcha.
And if it's not true and it goes to resolve, it does nothing.
Gotcha.
How does Spell Queller plus Essence Flux work? Not how you want it to, unfortunately, is the side note. So I think they're just pointing something out.
Yep. So Spell Queller is a weird card. We didn't really touch on it. It's mostly straightforward what it does. White, blue, 1. 2/3, creature, spirit, flash, flying. When Spell Queller enters the battlefield, exile target spell with converted mana cost 4 or less. When Spell Queller leaves the battlefield, the exiled card's owner may cast that card without paying its mana cost.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
good card.
Yeah, it's an Oblivion Ring for cheap spells, and it has triggered abilities, which means it's technically possible to remove the spell forever. So cast Spell Queller, put the trigger in the stack, target a thing, respond to your own trigger, bounce your Spell Queller.
The spell goes away forever.
Right, because then the leaves the battlefield trigger resolves first. Gotcha. There's no spell to cast. Then the enters the battlefield trigger resolves and exiles it. The card they were asking about.
Essence Flux.
I don't know the names of all the cards in the set yet.
Come on, Rob!
Try. What color is it? It's probably blue.
Sounds very blue. Is it even in the set?
I think it might be from something else.
I think it's from something else.
Yeah. Essence Flux. Oh, it's the blue card. So Essence Flux reads, it's a single blue instant. Exile target creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control. If it's a spirit, give it a +1/+1 counter.
So there's a lot of options that you can choose to do with Essence Flux. You can do what I just said and respond to the exile the spell trigger. Flicker the Spell Queller. So the Leaves play trigger will trigger, resolve, do nothing. Then it'll come back into play, and the Enters play trigger will go on the stack, right?
Yeah.
But I think that that's still probably fine for you. Is it optional? I hope it's optional. I want it to be optional.
Essence Flux?
No, Spell Queller.
Oh, yeah.
Exile targets both, convert a mana cost 4 or less. So, nope, it's not optional, so you'll have to target that spell.
So it doesn't matter with Essence Flux, because it comes right in.
It could, because if they have multiple spells, you can get multiple spells with it that way.
Oh, okay.
And then the one that you choose to target first and then flicker will get removed forever.
Gotcha.
The second one won't be.
It'll just be the regular
exile
Spell Queller.
You could also just randomly counter spells by flickering Spell Queller in front of them. And because it exiles and returns immediately, both triggers are happening. Both the Leafs play and the Enters the Battlefield trigger, and so you get to choose the order that they're going to go on the stack.
Okay.
So Spell Queller has something exiled. They cast another spell. You flicker Spell Queller.
Okay.
And then you have a cast the old spell, exile the new spell trigger that are going in the stack, but you get to choose which order. So you get to choose if their new spell goes in the stack first, or the old spell gets exiled first.
Okay.
This may not matter, but it may matter.
Okay.
Classic magic rules. This may matter, but it may not matter.
Yep.
I have a question. Tell me if I'm just being a real dum-dum sucker pop. With Summary Dismissal, 2 blue-blue, instant, exile all other spells and counter all abilities. I honestly cannot tell you what that means.
So this does two things. All the spells that are on the stack right now, including it, or all the other spells in the stack, because it doesn't say exile itself.
So it's only the stack we're worried about.
Yep. Spells are things that are on the stack. Creatures on the stack are creature spells.
Okay,
artifacts on the stack
are
artifact spells. So it's take all the things that are on the stack and throw them away.
Okay.
Get them out of here.
Yep.
Out.
It will counter abilities instead of exiling them.
So does that mean, like, say I've got some spells on the stack, and meanwhile I've activated some creature's activated ability?
Realistically, what this does is it counters Emrakul and Emrakul's trigger.
Oh, okay.
Because Emrakul's on the stack, or trigger's in the stack, you Summary Dismissal, you exile Emrakul and counter Emrakul's trigger.
Okay.
Like, this is counter an Eldrazi and all the things that it
but
does.
But would it?
Yes.
If I had some creature activated ability, that'd be gone too. Bye, clear the stack!
Yep. If you had activated a Duskwatch Recruiter, and then... If you had cast an Emrakul, and then, for some reason, activated a Deathwatch Recruiter at the same time because you felt like it, you would just, at that point, you'd be like, no to all of those.
Okay.
It's probably a little more likely into it, a Giant or EDH, where, like, I will cast a Wrath effect and you have a Duskwatch Recruiter and you'll activate Duskwatch Recruiter and then Rio will be like, counter that spell and also stop all those abilities.
Gotcha. Oh, sick.
Nice.
But so,
more effectively, it's like, no, you don't get an Emrakul and you don't get my turn, buddy.
Yep.
Ooh, okay.
Yep.
Cool. Because just countering Emrakul, you'll still get
they'll still
control
take your
of the turn.
Yep.
Because Emrakul's a cast ability.
Yep. Wow.
Okay, well, that's all the questions we had submitted.
Nice.
Okay. Sweet.
Great questions, everybody. Thanks for hanging out and asking that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. If people have other questions that they want your direct advice on, Rob, how can they get in touch with you?
They can ship me an email, robit, R-O-B-B-I-T, @gmail.com. Or if you want to send me a contact through the Magic Judge feedback form, blogs.magicjudges.org /O and then hit the contact link, and there's a link on how to contact regional coordinators.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go melt.
I'm definitely melting.
I'm going to unmelt. Already. I'm going to go home where it's air conditioned.
Oh, boy.
And
what's it like? Must be nice.
It's really nice.
And we're living in Minnesota in like a notoriously cold, I almost said planet, state.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting to get to my brain. The moment you've all been waiting for, cutest and grossest card in the set.
We're going to reveal them to you before you never get to know them because being too hot makes us both never speak again.
Megan, do you want to go first this time?
Sure. All right, everybody.
Because I have to find a tweet. Okay. Oh, I found it.
The grossest card is difficult.
It's
Innistrad, you know. It's,
yep.
It's horror town. And it's always, you know, it's difficult to pick the biggest monster of them all. But I'll tell you the runner-ups. There's two runner-ups.
Okay.
The first runner-up is Decimator of the Provinces. It's a pig with, like, three faces.
Ew.
It's really gross. It's like a giant warthog, but it's got, like, 3 to 5 faces on it. Really super gross. The next one is It of the Horrid Swarm, which is, you know, like an insect. Oh, boy. Yep, it's making me grossed out just to look at it. And then the winner, Seedrino 2.0 himself, Abundant Maw, if only for having the creature type Eldrazi Leech. Get out of here.
Are you sure you're not just at it because it's a new Seedrino?
I don't care.
I actually kind of want to see a picture of this close up to see if there's a sense of scale. Are those little tiny weight things people?
Oh, my goodness.
It's also for sure the chest burster from Alien. Like, look at it. It's
what could that emerge from? There's nothing big enough to let that out.
All right, everybody, it's time for cutest card, the crowning moment of any set. I want to read for you a tweet that somebody sent me. I've received a lot of threats for cutest card this time around. Here's one. I know it'll be everyone's pick for cutest, but if it isn't your pick for cutest, you are a literal monster. And somebody put the picture of Harmless Offering, of course, the cute little kitty cat card from the set.
It's actually really horrifying. Have you seen the art large?
Yes.
It has a little snake on its tail.
Snake tail.
And also, its foot is a horrifying claw.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. I've seen that. I noticed that as well.
Oh, I want to look at its
little
claw foot.
It's like one of its back feet.
Oh, yeah. But that face, though. That chubby little cat face.
Yeah.
So, I've received a lot of death threats about making sure this is the cutest card. I just have to say, I've done a rant about it, that I don't like when my hand is forced for cutest card. I don't like it one bit. But, you know, here are some of the runners-up, which I said I would name. Fogwalker, runner-up. It's a cute little long-legged spirit that's walking around in the fog.
Yep.
And Lashweed Lurker, which is an Eldrazi horror, but it's kind of adorable. And it's got luminescence, bioluminescence, which is something I adore in a fish. It's kind of got like a little fish face and little sloopy arms. So that's cute.
It does have little sloopy arms.
It's kind of cute. But of course, the winner is going to be Harmless Offering. There's just no way I cannot... I mean, I'm a cat person. People know it.
It's because you're a cat person.
I'm extremely angry that I am choosing it, and I'm disappointed in myself.
There's so many good choices.
As a person. What, Rob?
Curious Homunculus.
Okay, you said Curious Homunculus. It is cute, but for me, it's just not adorable. Do you know what I mean?
He just wants to learn. He turns into a voracious reader. That's what he grows up to be, is a voracious reader.
And isn't that what we want for all homunculuses growing up?
That's true.
It's true.
There's also Geist of the Archives. Someone who wants to read so badly that even when they're in chains.
They come back as a ghost in chains.
I think that's creepy.
That one's a little creepy.
But yeah, so that's the cutest card. That's the grossest card. Enjoy it. If you follow us on Twitter, I'm sure we'll have some pretty adorable illustrations of these cards coming your way very soon, courtesy of our good friend Steve. So yeah, there you go. Yay! We have to do our show wrap-up, Megan.
Yeah, we do. Ready?
Set.
Go.
Okay, everybody, thanks for listening to Magic the Amateuring this week.
That's right. We're going to keep this part brief out of concern for our health. if you'd like to contact us, you can do so at MTAcast on Twitter. You can also get us at magicTheAmateuring@gmail.com. Buy sweet playmats and sweet shirts at magicTheAmateuring.com. patreon.com. And also support us on Patreon. We'll do things like buy jumpsuits. What was it?
Armadillo underwear.
Armadillo underwear and air conditioning.
None of that is true. We only put it back into the show, FYI. And we keep reaching this precipice at our current goal, $600 amount, and then we keep slipping under it. So I really want this goal to happen because we get to release a set of bloopers, and the professor is editing it, and he told me that it's 30 minutes long.
Oh my goodness.
And he's watched it about 20 times, and he dies laughing every time. And I'm just like, I need to see this.
Even so, we haven't seen our bloopers.
We don't know what we're going to say, so please go over there and support us, if not just to push us up over that goal and to keep us moving forward, because moving forward as a show is something that's super important to us, to continue bringing you more and better content as we grow and as you become part of our family. So thank you. If you are a patron, you do a whole heck of a lot for the show. And if you're not, consider joining our family if the show brings you any joy from week to week. But yeah, that's my little spiel. Thanks, Judge Rob, for being here.
Welcome. Anytime. Love to be on the show.
You're great. You've been our judge since day one, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you been our judge, actually?
That's a fantastic question.
I don't even
know. We'll have to go back and count.
Yeah, I was on the show back when it was when it wasn't video, and then back when there were three members of Magic Amateuring, and when the theme of the show was different, and
so many
crazy
things.
Yeah,
so many.
And then we went to GP Portland, and that was fun.
Yeah, we did.
That was fun times.
It really was.
And the two of you were so adorable. You were like, man, I can't tell what time it is because I've been in this like artificially lit concrete room for 3 days. And it's so weird. And I'm like,
story
every weekend.
Of, yep. Story
every
of my
single
life.
Weekend.
Story of your life.